Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show. Everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And yeah, I'm Dan. And with us, joining us today is a very special guest, Mr. Luke Gygax, who is, of course, the head honcho of GaryCon, which is happening in a couple weeks. And he's also the CEO of the Founders and Legends stream. And he's an awesome D&D designer in his own right. So, Luke, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Glad to be back here.
Awesome. So we're going to talk to Luke here about the plans for GaryCon coming up and his own work. And we have the live chat happening, so feel free to pitch questions at us and or Luke. And we, if you're on YouTube, we do have the Super Chat available, so if the chat goes by really fast, throw your question in the Super Chat, and we will be sure to get it to Luke live on air. So GaryCon. So we, many of us now are thinking about going to a bunch of conventions for the first time in quite a while, and I think that GaryCon is kind of on the vanguard, the leading edge of like a big con getting back and people being comfortable with that. How is that shaping up this year, Luke?
Well, I tell you what, it's been very challenging times for conventions for the world. It's been very challenging, particularly for conventions and GaryCon. If you remember back in 2020, we were about 2 weeks away from GaryCon, when it was just clear the right decision was to cancel physical convention and shift to a virtual convention. And that was an amazing feat. And so I have to thank Matt Everhard and Jimmy Duffy and all the other guys who jumped in and helped make that shift to virtual. But this year is so much the sweeter because once again, we're right at the cusp. CDC just Friday, was finished with a masking guidance. So we're really very hopeful that people are going to decide to come. We're about a little less than we're about 60% of our largest convention, which is still very sizable. I think we're looking at 1,800 to 2,000 people coming to GaryCon, which is big in Lake Geneva. Lake Geneva is a town of about 6,000 people, so having 2,000 people in Lake Geneva is a big deal. And that's great. That's about the right size for the convention. Really the payoff for organizing a convention is not the big bucks, despite what some people may think. It's really seeing the smiles on the faces of all the people who are there and knowing that you created a lot of joy and gave a reason for, something for people to look forward to. And just seeing that excitement in the air, seeing people hug each other in the hallways and smile as they converse, make new friends, find their old friends, and kind of enjoy their gaming family.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the
thing. Yeah, I know, some of our viewers may know that I am on the board of a local gaming convention in Massachusetts. It's the Rising Phoenix Game Con. It happens in April. And I've been following a lot of this stuff as well, Luke. I have a lot of sympathy for where you're at right now. I know that board is predicting that that maybe people, because they're nervous and not sure, we've seen the things change rapidly so often that we're just assuming that a lot of people are going to wait till the last minute and just like jump in. I don't know if you're anticipating that as well. Obviously, we're hoping that our little show here might help that with that final boost. So maybe you can pop past that 60% mark.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think there'll be more walk-ins this year than in previous. Typically, we would come closer to selling out in advance, which is a real boon. But there's still people who are on the fence, and that's okay. If you're not comfortable coming, whether you feel that it's too risky or you just are uncomfortable wearing a mask, I think it's okay to stay home. And I predict in 3-4 months, I think we'll be pretty much past this as a pandemic, move to an endemic. But for now,
good.
Bringing people from a multitude of destinations, across the country and potentially globally, into an area for a few days where you're going to be in close confines, I just think it makes sense to, you know, be vaccinated, certainly have that laboratory, you know, PCR test, I think is what those are called, and to mask up. You know, you just, why not get, you know, you want a plus two to your save? Well, yes, I do. Okay, then put the mask on, right?
That is a great analogy. Just for the sake of anyone watching this, Luke, if I'm someone who's thinking, like, maybe I want to go to GaryCon, I'm not sure, I want to wait until the last possible minute. When is the last possible minute? When can I decide? What are the deadlines?
You can come. There'll be badges available on site, so we allow walk-ins. So you can walk in. And part of the philosophy of GaryCon is we want people to play games. So if there is an empty seat at a table, walk up and sit down and play. There's no additional fee, or, you know, almost. I think there's a fee for a couple different games that may have special prizes, or, you know, location that has costs associated with it, additional costs. But 98% of the events have no additional cost. We put there's a little pizza, it's like a pizza holder, a menu holder, a little metal aluminum stick with a, you put a card in. A green card means the game's open. There's an open seat. We've just started. Feel free to walk in and play. Or a red card is up, and that means, oh, hey, we're already full. But you can just go walk into a room. Look, oh, hey, there's people accepting a player. Hey, what are you guys playing? Oh, grab a chair. Here's a character. Boom, let's go. You can do that. When you're a guy who comes to GaryCon since the beginning, great guys, a friend of mine, Jim Skatch, I think he was terribly ill during registration. And even though he had, like, a very important gamer badge, he didn't register for anything prior to GaryCon. And he ended up going commando that year, is what he calls it. He just didn't register for any events, and he just walked into games. And that was one of his best years, and so he's done it in subsequent years, just said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to see what the fates have for me, and I'm just going to walk into games.
That's fantastic.
So you can do that. Yeah, but open registration was yesterday. Event registration started yesterday for everybody. So if you want to go buy a badge at play.garycom.com, you can do so and register for events. I think we have plenty of events. We typically have more events than players. It's a boom. So we have wonderful, wonderful game masters who come and run all sorts of great games. So, yeah, if you're interested, come. If you're a little bit further away, travel is something that you will not do, you can still go to that same place, play.garycon.com, and come to GaryCon virtually.
Awesome.
Virtual component again.
Great. Awesome. I was going to ask about whether we were still having that or not. So that is a nice option. Do you know if there, like, if people did want to come? And obviously, the I don't think we've said the convention is actually March 24th to 27th of this year for GaryCon 14. Do you know if there's still spots in the resort for people to stay at, or is that filled up at this point?
The resort filled up very quickly this year, so that's something that goes quickly. Now, we sometimes will get cancellations as you get closer. So I would look around, honestly, a short drive away. There's several hotels in Lake Geneva and even a town called Elkhorn that you can get to within 10 minutes. And be at the convention, and of course, look for, you know, a few days out, look for those swoop in and get a room on site or right next door. But yeah, it filled up. The hotel's had some trouble renovating in the middle of the pandemic, supply chain issues, but shortened some of the stock of rooms as well. So a little bit of a double whammy.
Got it. Fascinating. You know, one thing I saw, and I don't know if this is new because it seemed new to me, is the way that you've got registration running. Obviously, you have different badge levels, and people have been signing up for events at the platinum gold level in prior weeks. And I think that event registrations were just generally opened up yesterday, I think. For both the in-person and the virtual events. And I thought it was interesting that you keep a percentage of the seats reserved for later tiers. So even if someone is getting in, you know, a little bit later than the first starters at the silver level right now, even your most premier events still have some seats that are kept open for people to have access to even now. Is that right?
That's true, and we listen. Yeah, running a convention there's ups and downs, and as you try things, you get feedback from people, and so it was great. Some people wanted to have you know, upper tiers. provide more income, you know, more pay a higher fee, help support the convention, so that we could have all these fun things like the happy hours and all that sort of good stuff and parties and bringing guests, etc. And so it's a, said, okay, well, what can we do to repay that? Well, we can give them, either we registered, everybody registered at the same time, and we had events that were considered, you know, special events or a regular event. People didn't like that, because the DMs were like, hey, wait, no one can get into my event. It's not a special event yet, but then we get one of these. They're like, ah, rough. It's like, okay, well, how can we arm wrestle through this one? We tried various systems, and we said, okay, well, we'll just, you get a week earlier, you get first pick. Well, then, obviously, certain games filled up immediately with the diamonds and platinums, etc. And other folks like, wow, this isn't fair. I said, how can we do this? Well, how about we will release, you know, a quarter of them, a quarter of every game will be open for this level, then 50%, then 75%, then 100%, so that you have a shot, no matter what badge you purchase, you have a shot of getting into the game with whatever person you think is, you know, whether it's a, you know, you know, Mike Merle's game or a Tim Cash game or whatever it may be, wherever you want to, wherever you think is the one.
I think that's nice. Is that new this year?
No, we did that for, we did that in 2019 at least.
Okay.
I think Dave and Skip are my event managers, Dave Cohn and Skip Williams, and they arm wrestled with that back and forth and say, okay, well, this is maybe a little bit more egalitarian way of doing it. You know, you know, there's still an advantage for the folks who are in the very important gamer tiers, as opposed to just a regular, you know, silver badge. Everybody gets a shot at it. Sure, you're competing with a few more people at different levels, but it's still available, and we thought that was a good solution. And generally, people are satisfied.
Cool. Generally, cool.
I mean, never make everybody happy. I've learned that.
What? Really?
Yeah. No matter what, you're always going to get it. I've got a quick funny story running a convention. Just, you know, you think, oh, you know, it's great. People are coming to have a good time. What, you know, how hard could it be? it was true. Gary Conde, it was before tabletop.events came out, which is a wonderful convention management. You got me? Okay. Which is a wonderful convention management tool that we use to help manage a convention. But we didn't have that then, and gosh, we tried this new system, and it had crashed, it had melted down, there was all sorts of problems. And during that very stressful time, one attendee posted on the, I think it was a Facebook group or something, social media, and said, oh, you know, Gary Conde, they cheat me every year, they're like the worst. I was like, what, how do you cheat you? I get an early bird badge, so it's a discounted badge. If you bought it before a certain time, we used to give you a discount, right? And we would give you a free stadium cup, these handy dandy stadium cups that give you $1 sodas all convention long, right? You fill $1 soda all convention long. He's like, I get this, you know, I buy this cup with this badge and I can't, they never have soda for me. I'm like, well, what do you mean we don't have soda for you? He's like, well, I need a non-cola decaffeinated sugar-free soda because for whatever reasons, yeah, whatever medical, right. That's what he needed. I'm like, so you want water, right? So you want water. But I found him. I found it. I was like, okay. I was like, all right, you're not going to get me. I'm going to, you know. I called the hotel and I got a case of Diet Sierra Mist. And so it was available at the bar. And I said, because they don't carry it typically. So I just said, okay, Diet Sierra Mist. It's not, it's, you know, it's no sugar. It's, you know, sugar-free, caffeine-free, and it's not a cola. Boom, there you go. I said, just go to the bar. They will have it there for you special.
That's amazing.
You know, you can never make anybody happy. Free cup, no. You don't have soda, you're ripping me.
That's really going above and beyond. You know, there's a particular size of convention, and I mean, the time that we went to GaryCon, we felt it was right in the zone of, like, this feels intimate and it feels good that you know, it's even possible for what you did in that case to even be a possibility. And something like Gen Con is just such a mammoth event that you can't hope for to pay attention to individual customers like that.
Yeah, it's just kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. I mean, Gen Con, which my dad started in Lake Geneva, obviously, the Geneva Convention, Gen Con, has grown from, 100 people in the first year, 1968, I think, up to, gosh, did they have 70,000 at their height pre-COVID? I think it was somewhere in that tune, right? So that's mammoth, and you go there because everybody is there. People debut all the new stuff. So it's fantastic in its own right. And then GaryCon is meant to be more of a family environment where, that, you know, maybe it's not your actual relatives, but it's your gamer family that you choose to go have this reunion with in a nice resort, and the focus is really on gaming. Sure, there's a wonderful vendor hall with tons of talented people, many great artists that come. In fact, I think Larry Elmore, GaryCon is the only convention Larry Elmore is coming to anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, he's a little bit older and he just doesn't want to get out on the convention scene and hustle anymore. But, you know, GaryCon feels very comfortable to him. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And you're right. You can walk down the hallway and I can recognize who's there. Even at about 2,500 people, that's about as big as it can really get. And I think, and still kind of feel that way. But yeah, it's great. Like I said, I've made friends with people who've come there since GaryCon 1. It's been a wonderful way for me to form friendships, as well as so many other people. It's their annual trip together. Industry people will come there just to play, not
That's
to
great.
Work. Yeah.
Speaking of folks like Ari Elmore, I mean, you have a fairly long list of special guests showing up this year. Maybe you could like drop a couple names about some of the people that will be there and like running events and stuff.
Sure. So I guess I'll start with the older school folks who are coming there. Legends of Wargaming, Paul Stormberg, since the very early days, put together Legends of Wargaming. And, you know, we've had, you know, Jeff Perrin, who designed Chainmail with my dad. Health permitting, Jeff Perrin will be there this year. We had Dave Wesley, who's the guy who did Bronstein, which is sort of the spark that gave rise to the medieval Bronstein that Dave Arneson put together, which became Blackmoor, which showed to my dad and coupled with Chainmail kind of was the genesis for Dungeons and Dragons. Mike Carr, who's been to every single Gen Con. He was an editor, early editor of D&D, and as a teenager, he made this game called Fight in the Skies or Dawn Patrol. He's there. Dave McGarry is not there this year. Typically, he does come. He's the guy who designed Dungeon, which honestly, I never knew was a contemporary of Dungeons and Dragons. I always assumed it came afterwards, but from talking to Dave, he's like, no, you know, I was playing in Dave Arneson's game and he was, you know, I couldn't play as much as I wanted to, but I didn't want to run the game. So I created a game where we could go through and play without a game master, you know, a referee, I guess is what they would have called it back then. Yeah. It was the term game master and dungeon master didn't exist yet. So those are some of our old school guests. So Tim Kask is going to be there, first editor of Dragon. Tom Wham, great. I know him as a game designer and cartoonist. The guy who drew the Beholder and the Monster Manual as well. Tom's an uncle. James M. Ward will be there, that created Metamorphosis Alpha, which is the first science fiction role-playing game. Let's see, Jeff Easley, another great old artist, will be there. Errol Otis comes every year now, who's known for his iconic not easy for me to say, iconic art. And I think he's going to do art for GaryCon 15. So I talked to Errol Seth. I'm excited about that. So that's on the old school side. And then on a little bit newer school side, we have guys like Mike Merles coming back this year. My friends, Matthew Lillard and Joe Manganiello will be there. So there's just a couple. There's a few names. Charles Urbach on the art side is a little bit newer. A newer artist, really, really talented and great, super nice guy, will be there. So yeah, we have a lot of great guests. Jolly Blackburn is always there.
Yeah. I think someone told me recently Sateen Phoenix is going to be there, right?
Yes. Yes. You know, Sateen is again. Yeah, Sateen's great friend of mine, and I'm so happy for her. She is getting married to Jameson Stone, who's another, I've met him more recently, great guy. They're just a beautiful couple together, and they asked me to preside over their wedding. So I'm very excited to be able to do that. I've got my Universal Church ministry so I can officiate. And I'm having a special costume made, the GaryCon Wizard, which over here we have the little bust that Jeff Easley did for GaryCon 3. It's a just a wizard, right? And I'm having those robes, that costume made into robes, so I can marry them in garb on Thursday, the 20th, right there in the main lobby area, there's like a little bar and restaurant in there. We're going to do it there, and we're going to stream it as well. So
that's amazing. That's fantastic. Yeah. We had both Jameson and Satin on the show
last year. Yeah.
About a year ago. Great folks. Very. That's super cool.
Very warm. Very warm.
Interesting. That's going to be streamed. I'll have to tune in.
I know. We're going to do it live, man. It's going to be great.
That's awesome.
So I have some ideas for the vows, or you know, but they want to keep it fairly simple, not too drawn out. I was just going to say marriage.
Excellent.
And I'll say, like, I felt like, you know, reading the guest list for GaryCon this year, I mean, about half of the people on the list have been guests on this show, actually. So I feel very close to the overall GaryCon oeuvre. And if viewers of this show are fans of the guests that we've had on, GaryCon is, like, about the best opportunity to actually, like, meet those folks and possibly play with them in a game or something like that. You're talking about Dave McGarry in his dungeon game, and that's very much on our mind because 2 weeks back we had on Greg Svensson and Dan Boggs, who are, you know, friends and work with Dave McGarry pretty closely, to talk about a dungeon that Greg made back in 1973 before D&D was actually published, and then handed it off to Dave McGarry to run as DM, and Dave McGarry lost it. And then but they found it 40 years later. So apparently Dan prompted Dave to look through his file boxes, and they were like, "Oh, this is the famous lost dungeon." So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, look at the episode 2 weeks back with Greg and Dan. So just really fascinating stuff where that came out of, and interesting archival work of people even now discovering, you know, where the roots of this came from different people.
And I guess also there will be Pat Kilbane at GaryCon, and he will be debuting the Dreams in Gary's Basement, which is his long-delayed look at my dad's life biography that he raised money for on a Kickstarter a few years ago. COVID hit, and he ended up doing a lot of the work himself during COVID to be able to produce this thing. And so that'll be there. Of course, Mike Whitwer, who wrote the biography Empire of Imagination, will also be at GaryCon. So, I'm not sure if John Peterson is going to be there this year. Oftentimes he is. He usually flies under the radar anyway.
He does. He does.
Yeah.
He's a huge friend of this show. We love John Peterson to death. We have him on at least once a year. And he does fly under the radar, just like you just said. He's very stealthy.
But he'll be there, and you can pick him out of a crowd. But he won't necessarily tell you.
Yeah,
I mean, it just dawns on me that, like, you know, with you know, coming back from being virtual and COVID impact and whatnot, that if the attendance is at all suppressed this year, that probably makes it actually like a great year to go. And I think if anyone's not watching, there's a certain Luke, you're talking about sort of like the right size of convention, and that really strikes a chord for me. I've certainly been to the big, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 person conventions. There's a special place in my heart for those, you know, 2,000 plus or minus conventions, or even the little local ones that are like less than 1,000. Just they're so much more intimate, right? You get to know people, you know, reach out and touch them. It's like a homecoming, right? It's like a reunion practically. I feel like going to those things.
It is. It's a family reunion because I actually will see my family, and so for me, it's really a family reunion with my actual family, my gamer family, and a lot of the old school guys were like uncles to me. You know, Tim Cass, Warden, these guys—they've known me since I was knee high. And honestly, I've struck up some really wonderful friendships with a lot of the guests. You know, the other folks who come there, and they're in my circle now. They're the people that I can just call and you know, shoot the breeze with if you want to.
It's kind of like what birthed our show, right, Dan? You know, we thought we want to talk to each other once a week, and I guess maybe we can turn on cameras. and now here we are, and I imagine GaryCon must be similar for you, Luke, of just like you want to game with your friends once a year. I guess some other people could come.
Right, that's kind of what it was. Is we thought gosh, when my father passed away on March 4th of 2008, I was shocked at the outpouring of people who contacted us and told us how important he was to them, even if they didn't know him, right?
Yeah.
That he was, had impacted their life and that they would miss him, that they regretted not knowing him. And some actually got in their cars or whatever and drove to Lake Geneva just to pay respects, just to be there. And we had a smaller funeral, and I thought, well, what can we do for people who wanted to gather, who are coming into Lake Geneva? So I rented the American Legion Hall, which is the site of, well, some early Gen Con was there. And like your smaller conventions that I like so much, like an Autumn Revel or Winter Fantasy, things like that. They're 200-300 people, right? Yeah. In the 70s. And we played the D&D cartoon. We played the Futurama episode that my dad was in.
Right.
We had a little podium set up where people could come and share a favorite story about my dad. We had some food and drink that people brought, and we played games. And people had fun. And I think Harold Johnson, who's a guest at Gary Con as well. Again, I forget these guys are guests. But Harold Johnson is a great TSR guy. He's wrote some things for D&D. Great guy. Very nice. And he said, hey, Luke, this was so much fun. What a great way to honor your dad. You should do it again next year. And I think I was talking to Jolly Blackburn, who said, hey, he's like, yeah, you can call it Gary Con. And I didn't realize at that time that in Knights of the Dinner Table that Jolly writes, the main game designer character is Gary Jackson, which is a cross between my dad, Gary Gygax, and Steve Jackson, the American Steve Jackson game designer. And so they have a Gary Con, which is their Gen Con in their world. So so I said, okay, great. And I figured I would throw a game day and 50 or 100 people would show up the next year. And I think about almost 200 people showed up. And then that's it. Then we were just off to the races.
Yep,
and
that's great.
From being a game day to 4 days of gaming and with a few thousand people.
I'm going to throw up a comment a couple minutes ago from Joe Bing here, who says, this guy, Joe himself, isn't on the fence. I'll be there. Hey, Luke.
Hey, how's it going?
So there's a lot of excitement around that, and that's really nice to see.
Yeah.
No, there's people who won't miss GaryCon for whatever reason. I don't know. I think for the most part, if you've been to GaryCon, I think you will. I mean, I'm biased, right? If you come to GaryCon, you're going to have a good time. You're going to like it, and you're going to want to come back. I think that's the experience for the vast majority of people. Again, you can't make everybody happy. I understand that. But by and large, the team works really hard to give a good value and be welcoming and put on, quality events, be good, be kind to our GMs and welcoming to everyone. So it's a great environment and everybody's there to have fun. I think that's important. It's like, I want people to be able to walk up and talk to other people, to feel comfortable to walk up to the table and say, hey, what are you guys playing? Because that's how I remembered the conventions when I was in the 70s. I was just a little kid, but I'd walk up and be like, hey, what do you guys, can I join in? And, sometimes they said, hey, beat it, kid. But most of the time, people were nice and let me sit down and play a game. And I really enjoyed that. And so I want to keep that kind of thing going because I went to other conventions and I won't name any. But I walked up to tables. I was like, hey, what are you guys playing? And they just kind of gave me a funny look like, why are you talking to me? And I was like, okay, just looked like maybe there is an extra seat here. You want? And they're like, get away, dude. And I was like, okay.
That sucks. So that's uncomfortable and awkward and frankly stupid.
but maybe that's how, maybe I just have a rosier glasses from when I was from a different era of what it was about. But there's no reason not to want to bring that back and to say, hey, it's okay. And also you'd mentioned, hey, it's a good time to go and sit down and play a game with maybe some designers or whatever. And yeah, you can do that at GaryCon. And my friend Thomas Valley, who helps me out with websites and stuff like that, he said, he described GaryCon as the lowest wizard to muggle ratio. It gave you conventions. So if you're just a muggle, you have a chance to go and talk to the wizards or whatever.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
And it felt, in our experience, that very much felt like the chemistry of Gary Connor. That's awesome. So really good opportunity for people to still get in that either physically in Lake Geneva or virtually with what you call the ethereal event. So I'm really hope people, additional people, if they're on the fence, As Paul said, it couldn't be a better time to get in and have a little bit extra breathing room, actually, for good events to get in. Now, I want to ask a couple things about... So, you, Luke, your professional life is going to adjust. So, if it's okay to ask a couple personal questions, I'd like to do that. So, yeah, I think you're going to have kind of a big career change happening this year. Is that right? What are you planning on focusing on in the middle part of this year?
Yeah, so I retire from the military at the end of August, so I'm going to go move to the retired roles. I've been either active duty or reserve for 33 years, so it's a major shift, but I'm going to hang up the uniform, and I'm going to focus on, A, enjoying my family and getting some work-life balance, and be able to spend time developing my creative work. So I've got, I've written a few modules over the years for GaryCon, and have a little setting that I'd like to put a little bit more, hang a little bit more meat onto the bones, and get it out there for people to see. I do have some of those modules available on DriveThruRPG. So if you're interested, if you're anyone watching is interested in finding out a little bit more about the world of Okrim, you can go to DriveThruRPG, search Gygax, and there'll be a few modules that come up.
Let's talk about that. Here's one comment I'll throw up before we get to your work on Okrim, which I'm personally very interested in.
Yeah.
Our viewer, Stephen Wendell, is saying, I noticed the beard is not regulation.
Yes, it's true. This I'm not in the, like the Dutch army or something like that. So, no. I'm on my way out the door, but when I'm going to work, this will be gone.
Gotcha.
I'm going to grow it back in August.
Gotcha. Well, we're pro facial hair on this show, am I right, Paul?
That's true. This is true.
We're currently.
My whole beard was a result of our streaming for some. I think I was trying to grow it out for a character I was playing on a stream. it just stuck around. Yeah.
Well, you can't get exceptions to regulation. I could have a religious accommodation. I could have a shaving profile. There's plenty of reasons to say, but yes, typically if you're on duty in uniform, this beard would not be considered approved.
I mean, you were telling us before the show that you were talking to someone who was surprised that GaryCon wasn't your full-time year-round job.
Oh yeah, no. I was doing shooting a tutorial for Steamforged's game, a new game that's coming out, or Bardsung. Like they kickstarted it, and it's coming out here very very shortly. Which I wrote a scenario for, which was a lot of fun. And I think during a break, the sound guy heard me talking about the military, and he's like, wait, GaryCon's not your. GaryCon's a side hustle for you? I was like, yeah. I have GaryCon's all side stuff. He's like, what's your real job? He's like, I'm in the military. He's like, oh my gosh. He's like, I didn't know that. That's like a lot. I was like, actually, it has been a lot, and I'm really welcoming retirement so that I can focus on spending a little bit more time. I have three relatives. They're getting older, but still young daughters, 14, 11, and 8. And obviously, my wife is, and they have sacrificed a lot for me to be able to not only be in the military as a full-time National Guardsman for the past many years, but also to run GaryCon, which is a year-round process and takes a whole lot of time and make appearances, go to conventions, that sort of thing. So most of my off time, most of my vacation time for the past several years has been going to conventions or preparing for GaryCon and that sort of thing. So really, really looking forward to getting some work-life balance back and spending some more time with my family.
That's great.
That's fantastic.
Thank you for that.
So I'm sure we'll have some links to whatever of Luke's work is available online in the description of this video on YouTube.
In there right now?
Yep, great. So definitely check that out. I'd love to dig into that, Dan.
Do that.
You had some specific questions. I mean, the thing that came to mind for me is, Dan and I recently introduced a segment to this show where we live try to populate an entire dungeon in one show in 2 hours. It's a little frenetic. It happens. But that's actually had us really evaluate our process of how we go about building dungeons. And so since we have you here, Luke, I'd love to hear from you. Like, what's your process like? How do you go about, are you using random charts? Are you... intentionally placing things? How do you build a dungeon these days?
And I got a couple images of his stuff there. Okay. If you move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the ISHN2. So ISHN2P, that one's a little bit different. I was working with Matt Everhart, who helped me out with the virtual stuff. Great guy. I met him through doing virtual GaryCon. Thank goodness, because when the pandemic hit, he was able to pick up and run. So great guy. Also Air Force officer. Good dude. This one we wrote purposely to be run. We were thinking, well, do we want to run it at GaryCon? So we made it just like a kind of a 4-hour chunk. We have a longer story arc. I said, let's try to chunk it out in about four, you know, you could run it a little longer, but make it achievable in 4 hours, 5e style. And this one we're planning on doing in three parts. We got the Hardish and Toofy, which is coming up next, which we may actually end up kickstarting simply because...
is that this one?
No, it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, that's come out.
It would be part two of the blue.
I'm looking at very small versions of these images. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, and the art on this is really wonderful. That's I just want to give a shout out to Michael Sirigos, who did the art for me on this. Really talented guy who I haven't met in person yet, just because of COVID and all that sort of stuff. And I think he had the next one up there, which is the search for Darwaz Temple, if I remember right. It was the next image you were going to show. That's actually a Michael Sirigos piece of artwork as well that we used for GaryCon 13. That is the big bad evil guy from that dungeon, a fire elemental lord, and looks like a fire djinn or genie there, battling one of the Muzri characters in the world of Okrim, the kind of blue men of the desert there. Like I said, it would be a female one, so it wouldn't be a man. Blue people of the desert. And so he did a nice job there. This is a conversion of the 5th edition adaptation of the very first Okrim module that I created in 2013. I was recently back from a deployment to Iraq, and kind of that environment was in my mind. I was in southern Iraq. It was really hot and terrible, standing outside, and it's 129 degrees, and body armor is no fun. And I wanted to give people, I thought, hey, you know what? We're talking about fighting monsters. Man, if you're wearing metal armor, it's like 125 degrees outside. That's going to suck. And, you know, there should be some environmental challenges. So I thought, okay, that's fun. My wife is Moroccan. So I took some of the environment, some a little bit of Iraq, a little bit of Sumeria, some Moroccan features, asked her for, hey, how do you say this in Arabic or whatever? And that was my design. So this is a tournament module. So it's kind of in two parts that are about 3.5 to 4 hours in length that go together. So it's, again, less sandboxy than most of my writing has been with the purpose of GaryCon in mind. Like, hey, you can play these at GaryCon. And so therefore I have constructed them to be a little bit less open-ended and a little bit more, try to get you to complete the module in a one gaming session each chunk. You know, this is a tournament module, so there was round one and round two.
Dan and I talk about that a lot on this show, about the differences between sort of designing for convention play for that kind of standardized 4-hour block versus campaign play, where you're just playing across who knows how long, exactly. Right? Every Thursday night for forever. So it's really interesting to hear that you're designing specifically for convention stuff. Do you get to do the other side of the fence much? Do you want to?
I haven't yet. Yeah. I haven't yet, but I'm thinking, well, these are great stories. And when I started writing this first one, in 2013, I was working with Jim Ward, who's co-author with me on this one. And I was like, okay, boom, here you go. And I wrote this like long introduction, like, you know, 5 pages of like, you know, box text or whatever. He's like, okay, no one's, you're in a convention. You get maybe a couple paragraphs. You gotta, you know, cut that down, bro. Yep. And you're trying to put in like so many encounters and this character and, you know, this other, you know, he's like, yeah, a little bit more streamlined. You're just kind of like, okay, you got maybe 4 or 5 things you can do really, you know, maybe a branch here, but then it's got to bring them in a little bit later so that you don't get in this time crunch. And so you have to think out a little bit of where you want to go. But I have at heart some ideas of a larger, you know, that larger campaign play. So I might, if people are interested in it, and that's what I want to gauge, if people are interested in this, I'll spend the time to, you know, write the primer, develop up some of these other personages in the Undersea. You know, Shintufi, in my mind, is Greyhawk and Lonkmar, and a bit of flavor from, like, was it Daenerys Targaryen or whatever, the from Game of Thrones, the old kind of decrepit cities that were very corrupt. So you kind of mix in those flavors, and that's what the city of Shintufi is about. I guess I can give a couple minutes now. So, all right.
Please.
So you talked about how I come up with designing something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we'd love to hear it.
So I was sitting down. I hadn't written a module in a long time. The last thing I worked on was the Lost City of Gaxmoor, which had been like 2000. And I'd been focused on, you know, other things in my career. And I was like, okay, well, GaryCon's going. It's like GaryCon 3 or 4. I need to write something for it. And we're going to do the GaryCon tournament. And so I was like sitting there, like, what am I going to write on? And I thought, well, I couldn't think of anything. So I kind of came up with a world idea and then scoped down to one adventure. So I was like, there's this ancient, empire, the Adrisid Empire, and they were masters of elemental magic. So essentially they had technology, but they leveraged elemental forces to do it. So they built these great cities. They use earth elementals to, sanitation in. They have these towers that are 600 feet tall, again, because they can sculpt it using elemental magics. They can, water, there are waterways, etc. They have ships that can fly through the air with, powered by, air elementals, harnessing that magic, etc. And this was, 3,000 years ago. But there was a schism they basically were arguing about who was going to be the next leader of this magocracy, and they split off, had civil war. They kept summoning tougher and tougher, elementals and demons and things into this war. And essentially, they called up the wrong being through, they rolled really high on their roll, and they ended up pulling in, one of the royal members of the elemental plane of fire, who did not cotton to being summoned, and basically rained fire and all sorts of fire and brimstone out around them, which destroyed the land and created a place called the Blighted Lands, which is essentially, nuclear wasteland, a magical nuclear wasteland, right? Shintufi was spared. The people were killed, right? But the building still stands. So it's one of the only places that still has all the marvels of the Adrisid Empire. Other peoples have moved into it and occupied it. They don't, by and large, understand or don't have the ability to use all the features of the city. So there's a dichotomy between the, blue mud huts that are built over and around much of what is Shintufi. And then there's certain powerful people who actually have unlocked and know how to use the elemental magic, and they're kind of your oligarchs. They're your folks who are very, very powerful. They're called Zenix. And in the Blighted Lands, there's various mutated creatures and things that are magically mutated. So it's kind of, I was with Jim Ward. I was like, oh, it's got, science fantasy. So that's kind of the background there. And there's various races and creatures and things of that nature that I have notes on, but have not been fully fleshed out. But in a nutshell, that's kind of the background. I see the city of Shintufi is kind of like a Bosphorus place, where it's at the crossroads of East and West. And I wanted to give people an opportunity to bring maybe their their players who've been maybe in a more traditional fantasy setting, Western, mythos there, give them a reason. Hey, there's these cities buried in the sand. There's this all sorts of cool treasure and magic. Come over and explore. And they get to see a little bit of a different exposure to maybe some different things culturally that you'd have that could be interesting for some RP. And then when you go out into the Blighted Lands, I would encourage GMs to reskin monsters so that you get a sense of wonder. It's, you can't just immediately go, that's what that is, that's what that is, this is how I defeat it. So things look different here, and there gives you a chance for people to capture that. Well, what the heck is this? What do I do? Is this easy? Is this bad? Do I use fire? Do I use lightning? Do I, what is it? And so that was kind of my purpose, is to keep people on their toes.
That's great. That sounds really exciting. You know, and I also like the fact that it actually comes from your own actual experience in the deserts of the Middle East to inspire that. And I feel like the best stuff comes from, you know, real world experiences like that. And I was seeing a discussion online a couple weeks back of, you know, someone having an argument about like lighting rules, and they said, well, back in the day we had an argument. Well, we went outside and I held a candle and I walked 100 yards away and I said, can you see this? And that was like, okay, now that's the rule in our game.
Yeah.
And sometimes you lose sight of the fact that we're trying to make something concrete and simulate the actual real world in some ways of like what it would feel like for real. And it's the best stuff, I think, comes from those physical experiences.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've done that, Dan, I think, in a lot of our stuff as well, both in terms of, you know, in this show we used to it's called Wandering DMs, we used to wander around a lot, and then
that was the plan.
There's some old videos of us exploring the world and talking about how it would inspire D&D content, and that kind of got short, but we still love it.
Maybe it should be DMs in layer now, maybe.
That's good. That's very good.
Yeah, that's great. You wouldn't rebrand your show. I'm just kidding. You know, just hire DMs in layer. I mean, I remember my dad and I might have been in Sajkanth or something, and I was playing Melf, and I was like, well, I grabbed my potion of whatever and drink it, and I should be able to do that and move or attack or do something like that. And he's like, you get one action in the... And I said, but I'm kneeling around this really long time. He's like, okay. So he hit me with like a messenger bag kind of thing, like, you know, shoulder strap. He said, all right, get three different... You know, I had three potions. And he's like, all right, get three different cans of soup. Campbell's cans of soup, right? So I put them in the bag. He's like, he put them in the bag and then he handed it to me. He's like, okay, now pull out the cream of chicken, right? Tomato soup. Chicken noodle soup, damn it!
That's great.
Yep.
We have a video here on our channel where I was playing with, I was trying to answer the question of how big is a potion? Like, how much liquid is in a potion? And so I started doing these experiments of different sizes and seeing like, how long does it take me to drink this much liquid?
And he winds up with it all down his shirt by the end. you know, 2 weeks back... Two weeks back, Greg Svensson was telling us about, he was in the very first adventure ever with Dave Arneson, and the very first encounter, the very first adventure with Dave Arneson was a black pudding, which is a pretty nasty monster, and so he took him into his laundry room, apparently, and said, and something jumps out, shut off the lights, and then when he turned the lights back up, whatever position the players were in, that's what their characters were. Some had ducked behind the dryer, and some were just standing there witless, and somebody had run out of the room.
It's great.
A little bit of that is really nice. A little bit of that's super nice.
I'd love to dig into like the details of your design stuff, Luke. Yeah. And specifically like let's talk about like when you're actually building like a keyed location, you know, whether that's a dungeon or a castle or whatever. Yeah. Because this is interesting, we were talking to, Dan, I was just listening, I missed this one, we were talking about Tonnesburg, and we were surprised to realize how much of that content was just generated through tables, was just procedurally generated and just written down, and so I'm kind of curious where you land on that in terms of, are you intentionally placing stuff? I think Dan, when Dan and I do stuff, we kind of do a like maybe 50-50 mm-hmm, or 60-40 mm-hmm. split of like, intentionally place some things, but then let the dice throw some chaos. Do you let the dice throw chaos into your design, or is it all with intent?
It is with intent. There will be some locations that I allow random stuff, but for the most part, I try to think it through like, okay, especially because I'm trying to make it manageable and designing for convention play, right?
That's true. You need a tighter control.
Yeah. I need to, if they do this, if they're sure they can go this way because they didn't figure out this puzzle or this clue or whatever. So that's going to beat them up a little bit more. It's going to use some of the resources that they're going to be a little bit shorter when they do get to round two or whatever it is. Or, hey, they took a smarter way. They're going to have more stuff left, et cetera. So I kind of have to be a little bit more determined there. Now, working on Hardishin Tufi, which is coming up, Matt and I decided to use a little bit more randomness because there's some areas where you're underground and exploring and there's no reason. There's no reason you can't just randomly generate the tunnel goes this way. Here's an encounter, right? And you can spend as long as you need to doing that before you accomplish whatever goal you're going towards. So it really depends on what you're designing for. And for me, I've been I've dictated what's there purposefully because I'm trying to balance it.
Gotcha. I noticed that, and of course, you know, very similar to our show, right? So the Wandering DM show, we try to straddle all editions of D&D. We have a great love for all of it, and we want to see people playing whatever edition they are happy with. And so from day to day, we'll be talking about, you know, like, again, with Greg Svensson, like, stuff that existed prior to D&D, or Dave Wesley's Bronstein or something like that, original D&D, and then we'll be talking or playing 5th edition. And so I notice, and you try to make the same management there, and I notice that your adventures on Drive-Thru RPG are branded 5th edition, and, you know, and you can't make everybody happy all the time, again, right? And so there's going to be some people who are like, you've got to be playing my preferred edition and nothing else. For your designing, at what point does system become an issue? Like, do you sit down and you're like, I'm designing adventure for 5th edition right off the bat? Or is there like a systemless stage and then rules get added later on? When do you decide on what system numbers are getting entered?
Right. So for me, I would design with Advanced Dungeons and Dragons in mind when I was doing this. So I wasn't really a third edition player. I mean, I did, but it wasn't, yeah, you know, I could play it, but I wasn't as familiar with it. So I design kind of first edition, but 5th edition, I think, has significant differences. A great game, but just different. It's a different flavor. It's different pacing, different power levels. And if you try to design what's challenging in first edition may not work. It may not translate. So mm-hmm. I think I kind of think in two different ways. I'm either going to be old school, which could work for AD&D, yes, Swords and Wizardry, whatever it is, you know, all the rich clones, potentially DCC, or I don't know about Mork Borg. I've heard about that game. That seems like a fun one that I want to
a lot of people like it.
Yeah, that's
on my list. Seems to I bought it. I just have to read it. So yeah. I thought it was cool. But I do have some first edition stuff that is, it's first edition on purpose. And, I don't know if this one's also available. It's a Okrim Adventure written 1E that is available. I wrote it with Jeff Tulanian. It's really? Trouble at Loch Geneva. I recruited Jeff. I was like, hey, we haven't written together. Do you have some time? He's like, okay, I could probably work on something short with you. Because I had this really cool map by Alyssa Fadden of the Grand Geneva Hotel where the Gary Con is. And so we,
did I get it right?
So we meet at the Palace of the Dwarf, Dwarf King in, the Wyvern Peaks. Wyvern Peak Mountains in Okrim, and specifically on Mount Gigantor, something has happened. You have to go up there and explore. And of course, the cover kind of gives it away. There's a Thunder Frost Dragon there, which is something I created, a special Okrim beastie that is, it's basically a cross between a blue and a white dragon. And it's very nasty because it breathes white lightning on you. And if you fail your save, you become coated in a sheet of ice and are basically paralyzed for a little while till you can break the sheet of ice. And fight, and of course you take more damage if you're in armor, because electricity and cold is really bad if you're wearing metal armor. So that was a lot of fun. Great little module sets available in 1E. And then and Jeff Tulanian is a super talented writer. If you haven't talked to Jeff Tulanian, you should. He's awesome.
Great.
And then I he does Hyperborea. And then I did Nightfall, which is also a first edition game. It's like Knigget Fall. So, and that is based on, if you've seen it there, that's Jeff Butler art on the cover. It was inspired by Schutzgesturm and Sorcery, which was a chainmail/tractic scenario that was run in the 70s at some point. And basically one side is briefed. They're playing chainmail. Hey, you're the orcs and a wizard with a troll and you're going to do something. And then the other person is briefed as if they are the Germans in a tactics game, saying, hey, there's some partisans are over here. And there's been some sort of weird, you know, reports of like weird, you know, subhuman, you know, peoples over here. And you got to, you know, and of course they meet and it's German army from World War II fighting orcs and a troll and a wizard. And so this is a cross genre game where you're chasing a necromancer and somehow get transported into very similar to World War II place. And you have to figure out how to defuse the situation and get back to your home plane. So, if you don't have a picture of that, it's pretty cool. It's
I don't have a picture of that ready. Yeah. Sorry about
right.
that.
It's okay. Well, that's right. We're doing it live. That was going to be the art for GaryCon 13. But I realized a troll ripping a Nazi's arm off and beating him with it is probably not family friendly. I realize that.
Sometimes we need to double check ourselves.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's not that it's bad. It's good. It's just not family friendly.
Yeah.
I'll throw up a comment here. Our viewer, Joe Bing, a couple minutes ago, was saying, I recommend, before Luke even brought it up, in the chat, he was saying, I recommend Nightfall. It does sound like a rousing adventure, actually. Awesome. That does sound great. Yeah.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that. Yeah. So, that was cool. That is a fun adventure, and my friend Chris Clark from Inner City Games has been very, very helpful to me for many years, editing, giving me suggestions, reading, co-authoring several of these. So another really nice guy, and has a lot of product out there. So if you haven't talked to Chris Clark, he worked with my dad on Legendary Adventures a bunch.
Right.
Also a very, very good guy. I wanted to give him a shout out.
Well, we are about 3 minutes left. Any last thoughts that we wanted to share about your work, Luke, or about GaryCon? Anything that we missed that you want to make sure we get out?
Yeah, I think we covered it. We covered a lot of ground here, and I think we did a good job on it. So, I'm going to continue producing materials here. So, if you're interested, follow me on social media at Luke Gygax, Instagram and Twitter. And then Facebook. I don't know how you find people on Facebook, but there's not that. Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. So you can find me. Come to GaryCon. We're doing some neat stuff. I mean, part of the fun of GaryCon is designing all the cool swag. This year, we're doing a deck of many things, which features art from a bunch of artists at GaryCon. So we've got, Errol Otis, Jeff Easley, Jeff Butler, a ton of people, Charles Urbach, Jeff D. I said Errol Otis already. I love Errol Otis. We got a really cool deck of many things that we're doing. So anyways, have fun. Awesome. Go to GaryCon.com. Peruse our merchandise. Please come to GaryCon. If you can, attend virtually. If you can't, get there physically. And game on. Have fun.
Awesome. That's great. So we do have in the YouTube description to the show, we've got a link to the tabletop events, GaryCon registration system, and it's one of the best, one of my favorite conventions when I get a chance to go. And we also have a link to Luke's storefront on DriveThruRPG, which is called GaxWorks. That has the various adventures we've been talking about. So take a look at that. Also, I think, and you also on Twitch, right? There's a GaryCon channel on Twitch that has a bunch of live stuff. And I think there's a new show starting tonight, right?
Thank you. Very shortly after I get off of here, I'm going to be jumping into the Gax Pack. So the Gax Pack is a wonderful show. It features DM Jason Charles Miller, cast B. Dave Walters, Vivid Vivka, Eric Campbell, Eliza Pearl, and Adriana Cazador. I'm going to be guesting in a couple episodes here as we do our March to GaryCon. So we'll be every Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Pacific, 4 to 7 Eastern. You can join us on twitch.tv, GaryCon Live. And, of course, we'll be streaming at GaryCon, too. So don't miss out. You can tune in there.
That's great. So after this show, go and look at, go follow Luke live role playing on Twitch.
Fantastic.
Which would be great.
Fantastic.
So I'm so glad we could talk that up today.
Great. So viewers, definitely look for all those links in the description of the video right here, or on the YouTube description, or in the notes of the podcast if you're listening to this on the podcast. And if you have any questions, any general comments about our return to the convention scene, you want to chat about that, let us know. Leave some comments for us. Hopefully that will be a topic that I think we can expect to be returning to that a few times in the coming months. So Let us know your thoughts so we can we can incorporate that into our discussion.
It's really nice to be able to get together with people that you've been missing for quite some time. Possibly for years. Now, and of course, if you're new to the show, remember you can like, follow, and subscribe to us, the Wandering DMs, or the sometimes Wandering DMs. We're on YouTube and Twitch and Twitter and Facebook and GitHub and TikTok, and we do have the handle Wandering DMs on all of those sites. So look for us there for updates on other awesome guests like Luke when he comes back next time, hopefully.
Absolutely. And
I have guest one.
You definitely.
Just one, indeed. If you prefer to listen to these shows in audio-only format, you can get those podcasts at our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find them on all the various podcast carriers like iTunes and Stitcher and Google Podcasts and probably a dozen others that I'm not thinking of. If you are listening to this show right now on one of those carriers, please take a moment to rate and review us on that site. That helps other users of that site find our show, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, we definitely do. Of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show and everything we do here at Wandering DMs. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. You'll see our different tiers. You get access to a private Discord server, monthly behind-the-scenes stuff, polls and surveys, and after-party chat that we'll be holding on Discord live video to continue the talk in about 10 minutes or so. And you'll be here.
right here, doing TDR tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, where we'll be finishing up our game of Kids on Bikes. So come check that out.
Awesome. And I'll be back late Thursday night for more Dan Plays Games from the Elder Times, playing D&D Stronghold, trying to fight back from those gas spores that destroyed my city. Freaking gas spores! Come on! and of course, don't forget that we are here live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion. Thanks to Luke Gygax.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, we'll see you then, everyone. Bye-bye.